trust is our default mechanism. We have to trust every second of every day. I have to trust that the cab driver is going to stop at the red light. I have to trust that the pilot is not going to take a nosedive just because. I have to trust that you are who you say you are. And society needs it to function that way.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof. While we talk about emerging technology plenty on the show, we also make time to discuss things as human as deception. So I thought that Abby Ellen would be the perfect person to join us. She's an author and journalist, and she recently wrote Duped, Double Lives, False Identities, and The Con Man I Almost Married. And so she writes regularly for the New York Times, and she's contributed to basically everywhere worth contributing to, Time, Newsweek, The Daily Beast, among other pubs. And today we're going to be talking about the nature of deception, why we lie, fake news, deep fakes, and whether or not truth is going to be harder to come by in the future. So, Abby, welcome to Future Proof.
Thank you so much, Jeremy.
So, let's talk a little about your career to date, and actually maybe start off with how we first met each other.
I believe we met in a Lyft. I believe we met. Was it a Lyft or an Uber?
I think it was. It was a. I try to take Lyft.
Me
just
too.
Because I don't. Hate women.
That's good to know. Because otherwise, I'm leaving, and then, you know, you'll be stuck without a guest. I am thinking it was probably Lyft. I don't usually take Uber that much, but I do have problems with Lyft. I was going to Water Street once in Brooklyn, and the driver took me to Water Street in Manhattan, and that was his where the app told him to go, and it was just the wrong thing, and then he just left me there, and I was really annoyed.
There's a Water Street in Indianapolis. It could have been worse.
It could have been worse, or it could have just taken me into the water. So yeah, not that wouldn't have been good. But so anyway, but yes, we met in a rideshare.
And you have been writing on a number of different topics, which I think is really interesting. That, you know, how have you figured out, you know, what your beats and what you would be covering over the course of your career?
Somebody said to me that my strength is my weakness. And the good news is that I can write about many different subjects. The bad news is that I can write about many different subjects. I never wanted to just get pigeonholed as to writing about one thing. I mean, I had a column in the business section of the Times for 5 years. And then I wrote a book about Fat Camp. And then I started writing a lot in the health section and the style section of the Times and did a lot of psychology stuff and travel. And then I just wrote a book about deception. So it's all, but what I guess is sort of that I like to tell these, I like to investigate things. I like to uncover things. I like to talk about and write about things that you don't maybe think about. And, you know, with the obesity book, I mean, that was basically about weight loss camps, fat camps, and for kids. And it was kind of like, how do we help these kids and what do parents need to know? And it was this different way of getting at the subject. So I guess that would be my beat.
Yeah, and I think we're going to jump into your beats a little bit more in a minute or two. I think what we try to do is start out with a few irreverent questions that are totally off topic.
Bring them on.
Yeah, we try to lose people about 2 minutes into each episode.
Good, so I think that's good.
Let's see if we can do that. So first off, lightning round question. Have you ever met James Bond?
Yes.
He was your roommate?
Correct.
Okay. Do you want to explain?
Do you want me to elaborate?
You might as well.
I lived with a guy for 6 years named James Bond. That is his name. James Alexander Bond is how he likes to introduce himself. But we are college friends, and when we first moved to New York, we lived together for 6 years in the Village, right next to the Gay and Lesbian Community Center, literally right next door. We would hear them singing. We could just hear. It was great. And they would then clap, and we would bow. And then we moved up to 46th Street, and then I moved back downtown, and he stayed up there.
So you're somebody who has to investigate a lot of topics and get people to admit things that they have not previously admitted. So what's something that you have never admitted before in an interview about
yourself?
That
I've never admitted or that I've never done?
No, something that you've never admitted that is true, hopefully.
That I've never admitted. I mean, you know, I know the entire Yentl soundtrack by heart, but I think I've admitted that. A lot of people aren't really very impressed with that, but I think it's the greatest thing ever. I don't know what I haven't admitted, because I haven't admitted it. I've admitted that I like Keanu Reeves a lot. Can I come back to that?
Yeah. Okay. That, and I think the Keanu thing is embarrassing enough.
It is not, and neither is the Yentl soundtrack. Leave me alone. Really? That's awesome. Okay.
So I know you've written for a number of different renowned publications, like we were just talking about. So what's something that you just enjoy reading that you've never contributed to?
I enjoy... that is such a good question. What do I enjoy the reading that I have? You know, I've contributed to most things that I've enjoyed reading because I wanted to be a part of it. I've written the wedding stories, although I don't really read them that much. I've written, you know, the wedding vows and the times. I've written, I like mysteries. I don't write a lot of, though, like a, what is it? Lisbeth Salander. I can't write that stuff. I can't write fiction. So that's the answer. I like to read fiction, and I have trouble writing it.
So, no, that's a good answer.
That's the answer.
And what is some, which is actually ironic, we're talking about deception, and you know, fiction is technically things that are not,
correct.
Know, yeah.
That is not true. Right. And that's I remember when I was in grad school for my first useless master's at my MFA from Emerson College, and I remember I had a teacher, my professor, Pamela Painter was her name, and she was telling us about a novelist she knew, and she said, she's a liar. I remember this. This was vividly. She said, she's a liar in real life. And I thought, well, of course she's a liar. That would make total sense. She's a fabricator. She writes fiction. Same thing with Dan Mallory, A.J. Flynn. That story, do you remember reading that in the New Yorker recently?
Yeah.
And the lines bled. It would make sense that somebody who's a really good liar would be a very good fiction writer.
As a kid, were you a good liar?
I'm fast. I'm quick on my feet. And so I can think of ways to get around. I'm very good with giving excuses. So as a kid, was I a good liar? If I needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
If I needed to be. But I think fundamentally, I guess I'm a fan of white lies, and I think I always was. So I know how to make people feel okay.
That's fair. And I think that in some ways that dovetails into the real discussion around the book, you know, because... Let's talk about Duped a little bit. I mean, it's a fascinating story how you came to be in a position to write this book in the first place. So for those of you who haven't read it out there, all 14 of you, all 14 who haven't read it, tell them a little bit about, you know, your story.
I was engaged to a man who became, well, he was a Navy doc, and we lived together in Washington at the Watergate, which cracks me up, because if you're going to be anywhere where there's deception, where do you live? The Watergate. And this guy basically told me that he had been a Navy SEAL, and he worked with the CIA, all this kind of crazy stuff that was not verifiable. And so, journalistically speaking, it drove me bananas, because all I wanted to do was figure out what was the truth and what wasn't. And I was wrestling with that. And I would talk to friends about that. And some of them would say, well, you know, Abby, you can't know everything. Like, maybe there are things that you just can't know about what he does. And it just didn't sit well with me. Anyway, he turned out was, in fact, a pathological liar, had not been a SEAL, had not been with the CIA, nothing like that. And I had broken up with him. And a year and a half after that, I got a call from NCIS, Naval Criminal Investigative Service, that there was a doctor who was writing prescriptions for narcotics, and I was one of the people whose names he had stolen. Did I know him? And, you know, did I have a prescription for Vicodin? And I said, no, I do not. I prefer Valium, but I know this guy. And anyway, he went to jail.
Yeah, so nice happy story.
Nice. Well, it worked out for me. You know, my motto is monetize suffering, and so that's, you know, it's kind of a joke, but I turned this thing that was, it was not fun. I mean, it was really not, like, I'll tell you.
By the way, monetize suffering, that was the slogan for Purdue Pharma, right?
That's funny.
Thank you.
Thank you. You know, do you think there's a Purdue Pharma and Purdue chickens? Do you think there's a line? Like, do you think people get confused?
That's why the chickens are getting a lot of hate mail these
days. It's the problem with the it's the problem with the eggs. But I think that I think that it was, you know, I am lucky that I had the ability to write a book, to make sense of this. I originally wrote a story about it for Psychology Today, and I wasn't sure, do I want to write about being duped or why we lie? Who are these people? Who are these imposters? Who is Frank Abagnale from Catch Me If You Can? You know, who is Mr. Ripley? What is their psychology? And I'm interested in that, or I was, but I actually was really more interested in the people on the other side of it, people like me.
I mean, how do you think that it helped you kind of living through this? Because I feel like it gives you an interesting perspective, and it's not just like studying it academically. It's something where you lived through it, and as a result, you're able to speak a little bit more about how, you know, smart people. Because frankly, I think one of the things that helps about this is that you are a smart person who's raising their hand and saying, I was caught up in this type of situation.
I'm actually a moron, and I've been duping you.
Okay. Well, you've duped enough people, right?
I know. So. Am I that smart? Look, here's the thing. If you have been, it's this idea that our trust is our default mechanism. We have to trust every second of every day. I have to trust that the cab driver is going to stop at the red light. I have to trust that the pilot is not going to take a nosedive just because. I have to trust that my super is not planting, you know, explosives in my apartment. I have to trust that you are who you say you are. I have to trust that. And society needs it to function that way. So then when it gets into dating, you think, okay, people lie. And there are statistics on this. People lie. You know, women usually lie about their weight, at least in online dating. They lie about their weight and their age. And men lie about their height and how much hair they have. And sometimes their age. Depends how old they are originally. But, you know, but other than that, you assume no one's lying to you about being a Navy SEAL. They're not lying to you about being in the military. They're not lying to you. And then you realize just how many people are. And we keep hearing these stories left and right, whether they're people deceiving. In my book, I don't just talk about romance scams. I talk about people who are deceiving you. You know, your neighbor, your colleague, someone's stealing from you at work. Someone's stealing from the company. There's a million different ways. And we just want to believe. I just think we want to believe that people, not to get all on Frank, but we want to believe that people are pretty good.
And I think you're right. There are certain things that you feel that nobody will ever lie to you about. Like, I mean, it's crazy to me that he would try to get away with that. You know, and I'm speaking as a former Navy SEAL.
I thought you were a Ranger. I didn't realize you were a SEAL. But that make I mean that would
the
make
Ranger
sense.
Was afterwards.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then weren't you a Green Beret?
I'm working on that. That's okay. That's a life goal. But you know, there are certain things that people don't like. For instance, there are certain things where you say, well, nobody will ever use a Sharpie on a map of a storm in order to show that the, you know, storm is going in a different direction. That's the kind of thing that'll never happen. And then it does. So
and in fact, who's doing it?
Well, right, exactly, because we have no idea who in the White House likes Sharpies.
No!
We have to figure that out.
No. We know who likes Sharpays, but not Sharpies. Yeah, it's pretty, I mean, right now what's happening in the world is completely unfathomable, unless, of course, you were Philip Roth writing The Plot Against America.
So, talking about lying makes me kind of, as a subject matter expert, I've got to ask you a question or two about that, okay? Why do some people lie for no good reason at all.
Right, because they want to tell you that they've done like 12 different things and, you know, they saw 11 different movies when in fact they've seen none. I think it really, the short answer is a lot of people do it for fun. Just for fun. Just because. They, you know, there was this guy named Waldo Damara and he was the great imposter. There was a movie about him. And he was a real person too. And he was brilliant. And he was a surgeon, and he was also a social worker, and he was a monk, and he just did all these different things. And he was not a doctor. He was not a surgeon. But he became one when he needed to. And when, in fact, I think it was in the Navy. And when they finally found out that he had been lying, the Navy officers didn't believe it because he was so good at it. And when they asked him, why did he do this? Why did he lie? He said, I don't know how you pronounce it, rascality, pure rascality. He was a rascal. He was just having fun. So there are people who really just have fun at other people's expenses. I think even Frank Abagnale from Catch Me If You Can, you know, he just wanted to kind of see what he could get away with. And I understand that impulse to some degree. I have been known to sneak into a movie theater, you know, I go from one movie into the next. They used to call it multiplexing before there were assigned seats, just to see if I could do it, you know. I get that. I mean, that's a very minor level.
And that's a human nature kind of thing that's really realistically never going to go away.
Well, I think it is a human nature kind of thing. Right. I do. Just to see what you can get away with. Then I think, you know, it's like I always say, if there was no, you know, skin colors differences, then, you know, the brunettes would end up oppressing the blondes. That's how I feel about the world. I think that's also human nature. But then there's, you know, if you're bored and creative, you can tell stories. I also think that creative people, liars are more creative. Liars also have more, they're more popular. So when you're a kid in school, the more stories you tell, the more people like to be around you because you're fun and you make people laugh and you're entertaining. So that could be a reason. And then there, of course, is the mental illness factor.
Yeah. I mean, in the future, do you think that we are more or less likely to be duped overall? Is this something that there's a certain trend line or?
I think that it goes like this. We are more able to be duped, but we are also more able to be caught. So the perps will be caught. And it's interesting because why now are we hearing? We hear so many stories. There's all of these different stories every day. There's the Fyre Festival, right? And then there's Anna Delvey. And then there's, you know, Maria Butina, the spy. And then there's Elizabeth Holmes. And there was Bernie Madoff. There's Lance Armstrong. I mean, there's all these different stories. But a lot of that was, they got out because of social media and because of the internet and because there were paper trails or digital trails, I suppose. And that's, again, I think these kind of things were always in existence. We just hear about them more.
And you know, one thing that seems to me like it doesn't actually change is the fact that you're always going to have certain people who start to get invested in the lie. And I think, you know, taking the example of, you know, Elizabeth Holmes, you have a situation where, let's say, somebody actually literally puts down a few million dollars to invest in this company. Mm-hmm. And then they start to feel, well, it looks a little bit shady. I'm not entirely sure if they're totally legit, but I'm going to lose my money if I start to blow the whistle. And I think you see the same thing now on a political level where people kind of say, well, I've got to start defending this person. Simply because you've gone down that rabbit hole already.
And you don't want to look like a fool. I mean, that's also, it's the psychological term for that is confirmation bias. So if I'm interested, if I'm a Republican and Trump or whoever is in office is a Republican, I'm going to give them a pass because I like their beliefs. I like what they're doing. And so I can give them a pass. And also, I would also overlook it because it's my guy. So it's, you know, whereas on the other hand, if when I see Trump, somebody whose policies I don't agree with, to me, they're the worst human being ever. Right? How dare they? They're the worst. They're liar. They're despicable. They're this, they're that. You know, because that's where my leanings. So he proved my point is what I'm saying. It's confirmation bias.
Yeah. But let's think about fake news, right? Because I think that that's a big part of that. That is something that is in the news all the time.
But can you believe it if it's in the news? Maybe it's fake news.
I mean, as a journalist and somebody who's been around the news for so long, I'm sure you have a perspective on whether or not fake news is a short-term phenomenon or a long-term.
I think it is so dangerous. I don't know. I really feel like we're going to end up seeing more. I'm not surprised why we haven't seen more. I am surprised why we haven't seen more assaults on journalists worldwide. I did a story for the Times. I was doing it about charity and people. This is a true story about people who were using charity to make money, but to do good for other people. And it had to do with real estate. And I talked to this one guy who was, I had heard, somebody told me that he was building houses for, to help poor people. to give them a place to live, and they could end up buying them. It was a lovely story. And I called him, and he said, no, I'm not doing it for charity. I'm doing it to make a buck. He said, that's the reality. And I said, are you sure? Because this guy told me that, and this is what the story is about. And like, it was the PR person for this bank had told me this. And so I didn't know who was getting the story wrong. And he said, well, I kind of want to make some money, but I kind of, you know, it's that's really my priority. It's not really about helping people. So anyway, I was going to say a little line about it in the story, and then the story took a few months to get off the ground. So I called him back. This is a very long way of saying this. I called him back, and I said, listen, my story's going to run. And he said, I don't want to be in the story. He said, you are the lying New York Times. You are trying to craft a story about something that was your own narrative. I'm summarizing, but this was you had an idea in your head for the story, and you knew you didn't listen to what I was saying, and you waited all this time. This is fake news. I don't want to do it. And I was blown away. He lived in the suburbs of Chicago, and I was really surprised, because actually what I was saying, I was going to use this guy as an example of somebody who wasn't interested in charity. I was going to use exactly what he told me. And it just was delayed because it wasn't an important story. It didn't have to run right away. But that was it. So he pulled out of the story literally the last minute, and it was awful. And I thought, this stuff is going to happen all the time. And it was this fake conspiracy. You want to talk fake news? Let's talk fake conspiracies.
Well, and I think that when we talk about fake news, there are two different ways that somebody can go with it. There are the things that are actually 100% false, and or, you know, not given context, so they're not entirely true, right? And then there's the whole entire labeling good journalists, you know, regardless of where they lie in a political spectrum, just fake news as a way of just basically saying, don't trust this person.
Or saying, I don't like it. I mean, Trump did that recently. You know what? Fake news. It's not important. Don't buy it. Don't believe it. End of story conversation.
Well, just brush it aside. I think, you know, the general idea of bad mouthing is probably, let's say, something that has been around since the time of the cavemen, right?
Yeah, but it's dangerous when it comes from the president. It's dangerous when it comes from one of the tenets of a free society, all right? About one of the tenets of the free society. I mean, that's you know, Putin level. I mean, that's so you want a government-run newspaper? What is it you want?
Yeah.
So what's fake news? Is it fake news when you say, well, I had the largest inauguration ever, and there's proof that you didn't?
Well, that to me is an interesting thing, and I kind of wonder whether or not we're living in this different world where, I mean, I'm happy for the fact, if I can say this, that somebody did something that was ethically incorrect and, you know, manipulated and was devious, and, like, you know, I read your story, and that there were repercussions for that. So I think that
What are you talking about? Which story?
Just for instance, what happened to you, and that he actually went to jail.
Yeah,
you know, I mean,
yeah. There are repercussions for that.
Right, right. And I think that in general, to me, there's an interesting question. Like when you see, for instance, deepfakes, which we'll talk about in a second. There are people who conduct deepfakes against other people, you know, with the intent of making somebody who they don't like look bad.
Yeah.
And there are no repercussions. And the question is, are we going to live in a world where it's so easy to do the wrong thing?
Yes.
So that's very,
bleak.
You know, uplifting. Yeah, I know, right?
We see it all the time. And again, when it's coming from the White House, when it's coming from the top down, if the president and business executives and all these people can get away with doing these bad things.
See, business executives, though, I'll say, I think you look at, like, for instance, Elon Musk has gotten in trouble for mm-hmm. a few things that he said. And that wasn't even necessarily duping. It was more so manipulative in a way that was against the rules. And now we kind of get into this interesting thing about, you know, being manipulative versus
being duped.
Right.
What's the difference? Did Elizabeth Holmes? Well, then you get into a whole other thing about the way women dupers are treated versus male dupers. Because I would argue that women are, if the woman is the duper, she's a terrible human being. And if the woman is a victim of a dupe, she's a moron. She's an idiot. She's a fool. Whereas if a man is a victim of a duping, she was a terrible human being. She was a Jezebel. She was a seductress. She was Delilah, right? He was the victim there, and she was the bad one.
That's why I thought it was really cool. I'm not just saying this. The fact that, I mean, yes, obviously you had a profit motive to try to write
not
this.
Not really. Come on. Really. Have you ever met? I'm not. I mean, please. Right. No one's getting rich off of my book. Sure. Not I.
Yeah, I was going to say, show me a successful or like a rich author, and I'll show you.
Yeah.
Well, not too many of them.
No.
But in all seriousness, I like that you raised your hand and said that this is something that can happen to anybody, because I think a lot of people might not necessarily do that in your situation.
They don't. And that was part of the reason I also wanted to tell, because every time this happened to me in 2010. And then he went to jail. I got the call in 2012. So what's that, 6 years ago? Yeah, 6 years ago. I'm not good at math. But anyway, I had some time. I've had to think about it before the book came out and before I was writing it. And everybody I talked to had their own duping story. Again, whether it was with a partner or a sibling or a parent or a colleague, everybody had been duped personally. And I know many people who felt duped by their politicians. And I'm not only talking about Trump. I mean, a lot of people felt duped by John Edwards. A lot of people felt duped by Clinton. A lot of people felt, both of them. You know, I mean, it's everybody's feeling duped.
And those are people, you know, who famously did things that were, for lack of a better term, not kosher. So let's talk a little bit about deepfakes. So let's come back to that. Just because I think that then you're talking about people who are, in essence, framed for doing things that they didn't, commit. And I'm kind of curious if that's going to wind up being a bigger thing in the future. So for those of you who don't know, deepfakes are basically human images synthesized, based off of AI. And they're used to combine and superimpose existing images and videos onto source images or videos using a specific type of machine learning. So that was quite a mouthful.
That really was. Can you break that down?
Yeah, it's almost as if I wrote it down and I'm trying to read from it right now. So is that something that you're somewhat concerned about? Or, is this something that doesn't really matter because the technology to identify what's been a deep fake and what isn't
will get better?
Yeah, I mean, that's the question, is which side of it will get better.
It also depends who's being targeted. I have a story in the paper today, in the Times, about elder fraud. And because I'm now, you talk about beats, I'm now seem to be on the imposter beat, and I love it. But it's about people who were, defrauded by and targeted precisely because they're with people, their target group is not technologically savvy. So they might not know any better, and they don't know what a deep fake is, and they won't know how to identify it, right? So that's kind of a problem, I think.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Right? Are they going to teach us? I guess kids are going to grow who are going to grow up using the internet. Maybe they'll know about how to do that, but it's going to be, I don't know that I would.
Well, I kind of take the example of spam email, right?
Yes, where I know.
You send something to a million people, and three people fall for it,
yeah.
And it was so cheap to do that you keep on doing it forever because all you need is the three people to have their lives ruined forever, where like they think that they are like getting $60 million from the Prince of Namibia or wherever.
But they're right. And a lot of them are losing their money because they're giving them money and it's not traceable. So a woman I talked to for this elder fraud story thought she was getting a dog from a dog brokerage. And she ended up, I think, going to a wrong website, or a wrong website popped up, and she ended up sending $750 to somebody through Western Union. Now, she's 75 years old, this woman. It turned out the real company that she wanted, they don't take Western Union, they don't take cash, they don't, that's how you would know that it was. But she didn't know that, so she got duped. She's not going to get that $750 back. She's just not. $750 is not a ton. But it's certainly significant for, a lot of people. I mean, it would bother me if I lost $750 to some scammer. So I think that we're just going to be hearing more and more of these stories. Untraceable. Yes, those three people who got lost in that Prince of Namibia scam, that's money that they needed, and that money is not going to be recovered.
Yeah. I mean, it is an interesting thing to think about, the fact that as we have more and more people on this planet, all you need is a few bad actors.
That's right.
I know, obviously, we're recording this a day after September 11th. And, the reason why I happen to think as pragmatically as possible, I just think that maybe people are good versus bad is just because you would probably see more and more of these things occur if everybody was inherently evil.
And you know what I think? I think people are people. And I think people are complicated. And I think that no one is really all good, and I don't think anyone... Let me amend that. I think some people are rare, but are really all good. And then I think there are some people who are really all bad. But most of us are in the middle. You know, I'm a good person, and yet I might go sneak into a movie one day. You know, I mean, we all have our own thresholds. And I think there are gets into whether or not you think whether you think morality is relative or not, right?
Well, I think it's safe to say that all dupes are not created equal, right? And if we decide that there's a certain, you know, high level punishment for duping people in certain ways, such as if you're for instance, a perfect example is I believe that I am not allowed to mislead people into thinking I'm a police officer. I also believe that I'm not allowed to mislead people and think that I'm a more successful stand-up comic than I am. But I know that the police officer thing has a real, you know, repercussion in that I'll go to jail for it.
There's something called stolen valor. Do you know what it is? It's basically you get in trouble if you impersonate a member of the military, for financial gain. So if the guy I was with told me he was a Navy SEAL and he was wearing all the medals, I don't know anything about them. I don't know what the different things are still. And if I fell for it, if a lot of people fell for it and we gave him money, he could go to jail, right, for that. But if he just says, yeah, I was a Navy SEAL, that's free speech. That's legal. And that's what's so interesting about it, is because you can say I'm a police officer. I don't know if you, I think that's free speech. You can't wear a uniform. That, I think, is the difference.
And I think that's stupid.
Well,
that's my very official,
and I might be wrong, I might be lying to you. Maybe somebody can look that up, but, you know, from our vast staff in here. But I think that, but what's interesting to me is that it's only about money. It's only about financial gain. So I did a story. It's not. What about the emotional betrayal? What about the emotional trauma that people experience from knowing that their colleague is absconding with, you know, all this money, or that their colleague is doing whatever? What about that?
Well, have you seen any? And this might inform your perspective, but have you seen any evidence that we're moving our society more towards, you know, basically punishing things like that?
No, but I've met people who want to make that a law. I know a woman who is, it's her thing, this is in the sexual realm, but it's sexual assault by fraud or rape by fraud. And her argument is, if you pretend to be something you're not and someone you're not, and I fall for you, I'm not consenting. So for her, it's all about the word consent. I'm not consenting to have sex with you, the plumber. I'm not consenting to have you, the policeman. I'm consenting to have sex with you, the podcast host. And so therefore, that's a criminal offense. That's her argument. Hmm. So that's, you know, and then you say, but that's insane. I can't legislate lying because everybody's going to go to jail. Then the jails will be filled.
Well, it's kind of like, how do you, there's a whole spectrum of lies and like serious lie versus not so serious lie, and who gets to determine what's a serious lie.
And that's more relativism, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I did a piece, another piece in the sports section of the Times a couple weeks ago about a man who faked cancer. For 20 years, he pretended to have cancer. Now, nobody survives a brain tumor for 20 years, but this guy seemed to, and he was big in this charity organization called Pelotonia. He was like their poster child one year, and he was raising money for this organization, this bike-a-thon. And at the end of the day, he was pocketing some of the money. But the amount he was pocketing, or at least that he got caught for, was not that significant. So in the end, he had to pay a $2,500 fine. He has to do, he's forbidden from ever volunteering with money involved in Ohio, and that's pretty much it. But there's this whole community of people who...
But at least he doesn't have to go to Ohio.
He's in Ohio.
Well,
it happened in Ohio.
I thought he was banned from Ohio.
No, he wasn't banned. No, he lives in Ohio, Columbus. But the thing that to me was so significant was the betrayal that all of these people felt. But can you go to jail for people with cancer he befriended? He was their inspiration, he was their light, and it was all fiction. So either A, he can go write a novel, or, you know, but But what happened, or B, he can just apologize. I mean, what do you do? What do you do with someone like that, that with that emotional betrayal, if it's not a crime? You just roll with it, I guess.
I'm a big believer in we need to have a Gattaca-like future where we can identify these genes, and just if you have like the liar gene, you know, like the pathological liar gene, you're not allowed to procreate. That would be my perspective.
I think you're lying. I'm very. Who? But that's we
don't need those people. We got enough people.
But it's human nature. Everyone is gonna lie.
So we'll
you told me
in,
I looked younger than my age. You were probably lying.
I don't think I even said that. I just said you look really great. Okay.
No, I said, did you think I was older? And you said, no, I didn't think about it. So maybe you weren't lying. But my point is, should your parents not have had you?
If you would ask them, they'd probably say yes.
That's true, because you haven't given them nachas. But what's the line? I mean, what kind of a lie is an unprocreatable offense?
Yeah, and you're right. And who gets to decide
and
that
ultimately?
And
who's playing Rabbi Akiva,
right. Exactly. That's the big problem. So I know we're going to wrap up in a minute, but I guess I would leave you with this, and I think I know the answer, okay? But are you optimistic about whether or not technology's ability to determine these falsehoods is going to be able to overcome tech's ability to actually execute these falsehoods?
Lie detectors don't exist. There's no such thing as a lie detector. A polygraph test measures your autonomic responses. So that is your heartbeat, that's your anxiety levels, that's your stress levels. They don't measure whether or not you're telling the truth. There is something called, by a company called iDetect, and I think there's a few other companies that have this, which measures how much your pupils dilate when you tell a fiction, a lie. And that is used, that may be starting to be used in court, okay, and in criminal trials. I think, I'm not sure, don't quote me on that, but that's one way of identifying whether people are telling the truth or not. But it's so convoluted because I took one of these and they asked you questions that were double negatives and triple negatives and made no sense to me and confused me. And they did that deliberately so that they would say, did you not go out the other night where you never saw Jeremy? And then they would say, is the sky yellow? And
I don't not get that question.
Well, it was so convoluted. But they knew when I was telling what I was lying about because of that. So that kind of technology, if we get more of that, that can help people. However, that's... not everybody's going to have that on their phone unless there's going to become an app, a lying app, right? Unless there's going to be some way of determining that somebody's lying at you. You can put an app up to their eyes right in front of you. I can do that right now, and then I'm looking if your pupils dilate or not. That's one way. But otherwise, I don't know. I don't know if tech is going to – I mean, probably, but I still think people are going to lie.
Oh, I mean, I think that with any that's certainty, right? People are going to lie, and it's part of human nature. And I don't know anybody who would disagree with that. But I think it ultimately a lot of it stems from profit motive, right? Do you have people who's going to profit from?
But that's the same question when I was talking about the guy who had cancer. He didn't make that much money. So what was his profit? His profit for lying about cancer was that he became a little celebrity in Columbus, Ohio. Maybe that's a profit. Then you have to get into, I mean, if we're going to get super anal about this, then you have to parse what does profit mean? Is profit financial? Is profit emotional? Is profit just my ego? I mean, what's profit?
It's a combination of all of those.
I guess. But, what do you think, Jeremy, about tech?
I think that really it's going to largely stem from if, for instance, you have a lot of people losing money because of deception. People will have a profit motive towards working out new technologies to combat that, right? And that, to me, is the big question, is where is the profit motive going to be? It's the same reason why there are a lot of hacks nowadays of, you know, credit cards and other, you know, personally identifiable information. And as a result, there's a profit motive to now invest in technology that's going to combat that. So a lot of it really stems from that.
But that is, again, what is a clear-cut crime. But if you've got to get, right? So I have incentive to find out if somebody's committing crime, if they're committing a murder, if they're stealing, whatever, because that I know that's a crime. But again, if we're just talking about the gray area of lying and, you know, telling me the sky is yellow when it's blue and whatever, you know, then is there going to be something that's going to be able to detect that? Probably. Probably somebody will do it one day. So probably, but then people will find... It's going to be this cat and mouse thing, I think. People are going to find creative ways to do everything.
This is a really great and offbeat in a good way discussion, so, and I'm not lying about that. But Abby, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again to Abby Ellen for joining us. We'll put a link to her book in the show notes. It's a really fascinating read, and thanks to all of you for making the time to come back each and every episode. All your feedback is really helpful to us. Make sure to rate and review, since that really helps new subscribers find us. And on that note, if you're not a subscriber yet, I promise to forgive you if you change that in the next 20 seconds or so, all right? Until next time, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Future Proof.